We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, what is going on, everybody? How you doing? Welcome to Talk of Buffalo Podcast, where we often highlight but are not limited to Buffalo sports, news, media, and entertainment. I'm your host, Patrick Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at PatMoranTweets. Thanks for locking in today. It is Casual Friday. That means I'm joined today by my casual buddy, sports writer, sports personality, radio tour expert, my man, Joe Yurden. What's going on, Joe? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm grooving out, man. This music's funky.
I kind of like it.
It's great. It's taking me back to like 90s hip hop. I'm into it.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe even so, 80s. I don't know.
That's 90s. Late 80s. But I would definitely say it's got that 90s flow to it. By the way, so we're taping this late in the Thursday afternoon, and Joe is, I was kind of being a little sarcastic. This is like, what, your fourth taping today, man? You're pretty much in demand.
It's funny things happen when you write something that gets people upset or gets you lots of attaboys and gets your mentions blowing up. It's been a while since that's happened for me. So that's it's been fun. It's genuinely been fun. But like, some of the responses are just wild, out of the park.
Joe's referring to a piece on Jack Eichel that he wrote for Dive Out of Late earlier this week, which we're going to get into in just a few minutes. You know, let me ask you this though, man. So like I said, you're doing a lot of interviews, okay? Mm-hmm. And do you ever get a little bit, I don't want to say tired, because I know you on a personal level and you're always happy and, you know, grateful and humble to, whether it's a big podcast, a smaller podcast, radio, whatever it may be, you're always happy to go on and, you know, just talk shop with whoever it may be. But do you ever get tired a little bit, at least, of kind of talking about the same topics? Like I said, we're going to talk about Jack Eichel in just a couple of minutes and other Sabres stuff as well. By the way, our starting five this week, fictional sports movie characters. I'm really looking forward to that. More on that, like I said, in a few. But Jack Eichel's the meat and the potatoes, and you just talked about it. You wrote a story about him, and this is going to be the fourth time today that you're kind of, in some ways at least, talking about at least some of the same stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you ever get at least a little bit tired of kind of saying the same things over and over and over again?
No, I honestly don't, because it's a different audience every time. And sure. I kind of subscribe to the theory, granted on a much, much smaller basis, that Joe DiMaggio gave Mickey Mantle when he was coming up. He's like, you got to give your all every game, because there's a chance that somebody watching you, it's going to be the first time, might be the only time they see you, and they don't want to be let down. Now, I am not the Joe DiMaggio or the Mickey Mantle of anything. There's nothing in my life I am that good at. But if I'm doing these things, people want to have me on. They want to hear what I have to say. So I'm going to give it to them. And, you know, if they're kind enough to give me their airtime, I can't mail that in. I can't just be like, oh, Jesus, this again. Like, think of how spoiled and lame that would be. If I write this thing, it's got me, you know, yapping on Twitter all the time. Got people yelling at me, people applauding me. And then they're like, hey, man, you want to come on and talk about that? Nah, I don't feel like it. Like, what? Like, come on. I can't imagine writing something that gets that kind of reaction and then just ducking interviews or ducking chances to talk about it. Like that's, I know some people will do it, but like, and I know if you're in demand, like sometimes you just need a break. I get that, but like, no way, no way. Like I try to say yes to everybody. Sometimes not in the right headspace, like period. Like it has nothing to do with what I'm going to talk about. Just sometimes I just ain't got it. And it's easy for me, it's easy to feel that, but like, if anybody else is like, if, and sometimes like things get lost, if somebody emails me and it gets like stuck away and hidden away in the emails or DMs or something like that, I'll feel bad. I'll just be like, oh geez, I didn't see this. Really sorry. But yeah, but I try to say yes to everybody just because like it's good self-promotion, A, and B, like they're asking you, like they think you're important enough to come out and talk. So like, that's great.
Sure. It is. And well, you kind of mentioned it too. It's one thing to say yes, but it's not always that easy, especially when you're doing multiple interviews in a short amount of time. It's one thing to appear on radio or a lot of podcasts. It's another thing, you got to also bring that energy too. You know, like you said, you had the Joe DiMaggio reference. I thought of, which is corny ass me, but John Cena used to say stuff like that. You never know who's watching wrestling for the very first time when you come between, you come out between the rope or the apron and you go out in between the ropes and you wrestle. You never know who's watching you for the first time. So I get it. But yeah, it's also, like I said, having that right energy and, clarification on what you're talking about, that right vibe. That means, it means a lot too. You're really good at that, man. I've said this before, Joe, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. I truly mean this. I think you're a really good writer. Don't get me wrong. I love reading your shit and I have for quite a long time. In fact, that's how we first connected before I started having you on the podcast and we've gotten to know each other on a personal level. I first was drawn to you because of your writing, but I still think that you're just as good, if not better, suited for radio, man. I think you got a good voice. I think you got a good delivery. I think you got a good personality and I think you have the right temperament to be able to do something whether it's podcasted or whether it's radio. Do you enjoy talking more than you do writing? Now I know like I've asked John Vogel this and he's admitted straight up. John says, I hate talking. I hate doing podcasts and radio. He does them because he knows it's part of the gig, but he would much rather write. Jay Skursky's kind of the same way on the football side. Like where do you fall on that? If you had your choice of doing either, like writing a kick-ass story or being on the air for 20 minutes and having an unbelievable interview, like what's your personal preference there?
You know, it's a lot harder.
It's a tough question.
Yeah. It's so much more difficult to write the best story, I think, because you have, ideally, like if it's going to be like a big research piece or something like that, you have a lot of time to work on it and really finesse it and get it right down, you know, to where you have to get it to make it as good as you think it can be. And sometimes that creates moments to overthink or to get lost in some angles and miss something, you know, that might be, you know, a better story or better, you know, better way to take things. And like you have a lot of creative license in writing. Like you basically can, you know, write anything as long as, you know, it's on point. And making it, you know, just making it sound good or making it like read like the good story is really tough. Now, that's not to say that speaking is easy. Like I'm very guilty at rambling constantly. Like that's my biggest worry whenever I do radio hits is like, if I get rambling and I hear the host like trying to jump in, I'm just like, oh crap, I did it. And then I feel terrible.
Yeah, but as a guest, I think that's a good thing, Joe. Now, if it was me and I was rambling and when I have a guest on and I never shut up, it'd be the opposite way, but you're my guest. People are tuning in to listen. They're not here to listen to me, man. They're here to listen to you. I'm not stupid. I know that. So I don't consider it rambling. I think you're doing what you're supposed to do when you're the guest. There's a difference between being the guest and the host. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. And I think you can get great interviews on the radio. I mean, I remember one time I was sitting in with Tim Graham during his show when he was on 1270. And I didn't know what he had planned for that day. Like I knew I was coming in to like hang out and just kind of, you know, talk. It was like, you know, it was me, Matthew Fairburn and Graham in there or Joe and Jonah. Like it was his usual crew. And then I was just jumping along for the ride that day. And his phone guest that day was OJ Simpson.
And I remember that.
what? I was like, what am I doing? Why am I in the room for this? This is nuts. And it was just an unbelievable interview. Like, not only for the fact that it's OJ and like everything that's OJ, you know, everything that's insane about OJ, but it was just OJ just having like a regular normal conversation. OJ wanted to talk about fantasy football more with Tim than he did like anything else. And that to me just blew me away. I was like, what do you mean this guy just wants to talk fantasy football? He's like, he's a huge fantasy nerd. And I'm just like, holy hell, okay. And then he like, that's an unbelievable interview. But then he followed it up. He spoke with Scott Farrell, big, you know, radio sports talk show host. He's had like national shows, everything. Like,
yeah,
no, because he's got the voice that's like this. Hey, boys, have a beer. Yep. You know, like he's got just an unforgettable voice, just like incredible radio talent. And Scott was he was telling stories about like working in sports radio and like how much radio can just kick you when you're down and kick you when you're up too. And he told this story about how he all the jobs that he's had, you know, like in radio, just like trying to keep up with gigs. He said that the day that his father died, the day his dad died, his station was like, hey, can you come in? Can you come in for and do a couple hours? And wow. He was just like, well, my dad died. And they're just like, well, you better come in. And he's just like, all right, I guess I got to go in because this is how it is. And he did a show the day his dad died. And I'm just like, man, fuck radio. That's like that. Like that's the horrible, yeah. Like that's the horrible, ugly part of radio where a program director or, you know, station manager or whatever thinks that, and, you know, hey, they think what they're doing is the most important thing in the world. I get it. You have FCC regulations, you can't go off the air. Like, that's fine. But have a goddamn heart. Like, let somebody grieve. Let somebody just get away. And, you know,
did he get through it? Did he get through it? Do you remember?
Yeah. I mean, he said he got through it, but he's like, that's how messed up, you know, terrestrial radio is, where it's just like, no, man, you got to keep the wheels moving. You got to keep the machine greased. And that to me is the hardest part of radio. And then you're judging on ratings, which even harder to do now when you've got iPods and your phones and satellite radio. Like, good luck getting ratings now. Like, that's
right.
That's why radio is in such a bad place now. Like, that's why all these big radio companies now do podcasts, because it's just like, well, shoot, if you missed it on the air, it doesn't matter. It's on our website. That's a really terrible way of doing business. So, I think of things like that, and I think of like all like the times I wanted to pull my hair out writing a story, and I'm like, boy, I got in the wrong industry. Like getting into communications was probably the wrong way to go about it, because it's all so stressful, and you do it because you love it, but it pays like trash and you get taken advantage of constantly. But like, I don't know, you just kind of go along with it because you love it and you're good at it. Like in my case, I'm good at it, and I'm stuck in my head where I'm just like, well, if I don't do this anymore, what the hell am I going to do next? I'm like, that's a bad place to be. But like, I don't know, man. But if I had to pick one or the other, I don't know. Like, I honestly don't. I don't know if I could carry a whole sports talk show for like 2 hours a day. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of topics.
Well, maybe not cover by yourself. If you had call-in guests, if you had interaction with fans, I think you'd be off and running. I think you'd be really good at that for sure. You know, it's funny. It's not funny at all when you talk about Scott Farrell going on the air after his dad died. Dude, if I get in an argument over some stupid shit with my wife, I don't want to come here and have to tape a podcast, because that shit's on my mind and I have a hard time separating and getting off. I got to be like in the right mind space. I would never be able to do that. And you bringing up OJ being on Tim's show, man, I do remember that very well. And I also remember the reaction, which was very mixed. I'm talking about fans. Mm-hmm. A lot of fans love the fact, hey, man, this dude got OJ and no one else could do it. To Tim's credit, OJ ain't talking to nobody except Tim Graham for the most part. You know what I mean? He don't talk to nobody. That's amazing to me. And I side on the side of that amazes me personally. But there were a lot of people out there like, fuck OJ, how you talk to this murderer. Mm-hmm. And then, as you know, OJ ain't going to talk about any of that stuff. OJ wants, like you said, he wants to talk about fantasy football and, you know, powder puff stuff. What? Which
NFL, golf, you know, like he'll talk about any of that
golf
stuff.
Exactly. What the hell is he... He ain't going to sit there and talk about shit. So I don't know. Like I said, I remember the reactions to when, because Tim's had about the radio, Tim's written a couple stories with it, or had a couple interviews with him for stories. Mm-hmm. Just a real fascinating thing. But anyway, going back to this whole, you know, when you're doing a lot of interviews and stuff like that. Imagine being a movie star. Okay. Now, cool as hell. Obviously, you're rich, you're famous. That's all cool. But like when you're out, like these guys really grind, and these women, they just grind. Imagine having to do like these press packets where they sit in a hotel. And I'm telling you right now, like this is going to be the third or fourth time today. You're talking about Jack Eichel for what, 15 minutes? Imagine having to talk about the movie that you did and getting the literal same questions over and over and over again, probably 40, 50 times over the course of 2 or 3 days. That would be that'd be tough to do.
Yeah, I've seen like a few like behind the scene things for those junkets, and it's like a supercut of just getting like this one particular question again and again and again, like six, seven interviews in a row where it's the same question, and like they answer it the first time and they're just like yeah, and then by the time it's like that sixth or seventh in a row, they're like yeah, and then like if I'm the interviewer in that case, I'm just like, oh shit, they've been asked this 1,000 times. Like you got to come up with some, like some deeper cut stuff, or like get, you know, do your research. Like, you know, the guy that hosts Hot Ones, I don't know if you've seen that on YouTube, where it's,
the guy with the sauces.
Yes. And the amount of research he and his staff do on the people that they bring on provides fascinating questions. Like it's honestly incredible, like the kind of depths they get, because the number of times I've seen somebody go, oh man, you did your research when asking a question. It's just like, yeah, they did, because that's not stuff they get asked about a lot. And that's what you need to do with like a platform like that. Whereas, you know, I hear what you're like, I want to go back to what you said about, you know, being in the right mindset for that. I used to do acting when I was in high school and a little bit in college. Like I did theater stuff. And I remember in high school, my girlfriend hated it that I was able to compartmentalize when I'm on stage. Cause like her and I would be having an argument or something, and then it would completely affect everything she was doing. I said she couldn't concentrate. She couldn't do her lines, couldn't do anything. It was just pretty diva-like. Like, I'll be honest. It was very like, I can't, I need a moment. Like, and I'm standing up there like, do your line. Like, let's go. Like, I can do this. We can have this argument after we do this scene. But like, she couldn't. And it was just like, I'm able to do things like that a lot of times. So granted, I don't think I would ever have been able to do what Scott Farrell did. I would have been like, fuck you, fire me. Like, if that's the case, right. I can't have a day off for that. Eat shit. Like, I don't want to work for you anymore. But, you know, like being able to like, just kind of like, mentally split that apart when you need to do stuff. It's so hard. It's so hard to do when the stakes are a little bit higher and the things that might be distracting you are much more serious. Like, you know, theater stuff, arguing with your girlfriend, whoop-de-doo, who cares? But like when it's, if you're dealing with family stuff and you're dealing with like, you know, stress of the job and like all that comes together. I mean, if you get out of that without having affect one thing or the other or both, you are some kind of unbelievable machine, because that stuff can affect you completely. Like, I understand, like if you get, like you said, you get in a fight with your wife, you don't want to talk about anything. You're just like, I need to figure this out. Like, that's serious business. Like that's relationship. That's just like, you got to take care of home.
I struggle with it. I struggle with it, man. I struggle with compartmentalizing issues that have nothing to do with, you know, the podcast, and I'm not really good at letting shit go. Maybe that's part of my problem, man. I hold on to a lot of shit and it stews in my mind. And I guarantee you, I've taped some shows in the past where, I mean, maybe I'm being a little too self-critical. I don't think anybody listening would be led on to anything. But when I listen, I'm like, I know. And I remember the mind space I was in when I was doing this episode and having this interview. I'm like, I wanted to fucking strangle somebody, but I'm kind of going through the motions a little bit to get through it. So yeah, separating life and work sometimes is a little bit harder than it sounds, for sure. I admit it. I struggled. I'd be interested in knowing how many podcasters or radio people out there struggle with. Now, I'm not saying that they can't do it, but for some people, maybe it's easy to separate, you know, issues in your life than when you get behind a mic or in front of a camera, whatever it may be. I'm not sure that it's easy for most people. Some people can probably do it easier than others, but I can't. Good thing I do a podcast, because if this was like a YouTube show, There would have been times like you'd be talking and bringing the energy that you're supposed to bring and making a good point. I'd be fucking looking like angry Adam Sandler. You know, when he makes that frown, that face while you're talking, like in, what is it? The Wedding Singer, like after he gets left at the altar and he's just miserable trying to sing. That would be like the look I'd have on my face while you'd be talking and doing your job. And you look like I'm gonna fucking kill somebody.
But yeah, that's the fun, quote unquote, of this business, where, you know, the content machines never stop. Like, it never stops. Even on holidays, it never stops. Like,
right.
When I was with NBC, like the number of times it was just like, well, it's Christmas and we still got to write a few things. It's like,
there's nothing happening. It's the NHL's on holiday break. Doesn't matter. We got to keep the site moving. Like, eat shit. It's Christmas. Like that, you know, get out of my face. But like, you know, like I have a lot of sympathy for like NBA coverage people because they always have games on Christmas Day, and for NFL people with Thanksgiving, where it's just kind of like, hey, everybody's home. Let's put a bunch of stuff on TV. It's like, yeah, everybody's home except us, you know, except everybody playing and covering the games. Like, yeah, everybody's home enjoying it. Neat. Great.
You know, it's funny you talk about hockey and how it never stops. I've made no secrets on this podcast more times than I could count that I don't really care too much about the NHL if the Sabres aren't involved. I got a rare hockey take, a non-Sabres take real quick before we jump into Jack here. I was actually stoked on Wednesday. I did watch a lot of the game when the Islanders knocked out Boston. That crowd, that was amazing. That was awesome. Great crowd. I loved seeing it. Not just because I hate the Boston Bruins. It was really cool to see the Islanders advance and just that crowd, just the time they were having. Again, we're still coming off a lot of shit over this last year with COVID. So just to see fans that happy and that packed and that excited, to me, that was fucking awesome. And I tell you, I don't watch much hockey when the Sabres don't play. Playoffs or not, I'm being honest, which I don't care that much. But New York versus Tampa, I'm in for that. That's going to be fun. I'm excited about watching that series. Go Islanders. By the way, blasting me down here. I know I literally live right outside of Tampa. I don't care. I'm a New Yorker. I want the Islanders. If it wasn't for the fact that I'm getting ready to pack, move out of this apartment, and I'm going to be spending at least all the summer in Buffalo, and I got a lot of shit going on over the next couple weeks. If it wasn't for that, man, I'd be looking for some Islanders gear right now. I mean, going out to the bars. They're going to probably get my ass kicked at some of these places. Everybody. But it would be with some Islander shit on and get my ass kicked. It would be worth it. And seriously, that's going to be a good series. I'm really excited about that one.
Yeah, it's a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference final, like in the bubble, which I don't know how many people actually remembered that being.
But with
the final.
Fans, though. But yeah, exactly. But now I'm saying with rabid fans, it feels like it's completely different. Even though it is a rematch, it just feels completely different.
Yeah, excited. There's actual home ice advantage. Like both teams can fill up their arena now, so it's like there's a home ice advantage there. Like it clearly affected the Bruins every time they played on Long Island. Oh my God. Like that was just like, whoa, okay. We walked into the hornet's nest here. This is
fun
tough.
To watch.
Like the fact that they all started chanting New York Saints during the game because of what Coach Cassidy had said, like, it's like, well, you know, we want some calls, like own it. Like that's, you know, us upstaters, I consider myself an upstater. I know Western New York people are like, we're Western New York. Please just calm down. But anybody up here just knows, has a good feel for what it's like to, you know, to be New York. Like you're New York, like we're all New Yorkers in different ways. Now, it's not the New York City way where it's just, you know, roughneck, whatever. We're not Long Island. It's none of that. But like, we get it. Like if you're going to talk crap, you're going to get it fed right back to you. Like that's just the way it goes. So it was such a beautiful New York way to handle like coach talking shit about your team. Just like, yeah, we're going to own it. And like, people were busting out old lacrosse jerseys because there used to be like the New York Saints. People were wearing those things in the frigging game. And I was just like, okay, okay, perfect. This is how it should go. Like, just, you know, they insult you, just take it and run with it. It's great.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Back with Joe Yordan. So yeah, man, I mean, New York, Tampa, two excited fan bases, going to watch some good hockey. Speaking of excited fan bases, not the Buffalo Sabres fan base right now. Look, so you wrote a piece this week, and I have you on every Friday. So whether we're shooting the shit like we just did for 20 minutes or we dive right into hockey, whatever it may be, I have you on every week. But I, even if you weren't my casual Friday guest, I would have been calling you out to get you on the show anyway this week because you wrote a piece for Die by the Blade, making the best out of losing your best player. Subtitled, Jack Eichel won't be with the Sabres much longer, and boy, does reality stink. Elaborate on that a little bit, the piece, and also some of the reaction that you've gotten I've seen just from Twitter. I mean, very, very vocal. I mean, most people completely agree with the article. It's just it's people being vocal about their opinions of like going and the team. So kind of just talk a little bit about that article and some of the reception that you've gotten from it.
Well, the mindset for me was, first off, I hadn't, you know, I wanted to write something for the site because it had been a little while, you know, honestly, there, you know, with all the news that's going around, it's just kind of like, you know, you go around the bend with it and it's just kind of dull. So I figured it was time for a column. And, you know, I've caught a lot of people just being like, nah, I don't think he's gone. They're going to be able to patch this up. It's going to work. Like everything will be fine. And I've been telling everybody since like that end of the season press conference, like this ain't fine. This is done. And then, you know, Adams had that second availability before the lottery and he got asked about Eichel again and he doubled down and he was just like, listen, I trust our doctors, you know, and, you know, Jack's got his opinions and whatever he can have them. But, you know, he's got to do it our way. And I was just like, you gave him the double birds there. You're just like, fuck you, get out. That's what I took it as. You know, I mean, Jack, we only heard from at the end of the season and we're never going to hear from him again until he's traded. Now, I can't say unless because he's going to get traded. It's just a question of when it happens. And I got to think. So I got to thinking about it and I was just kind of like, let me, you know, have some fun with this. Write a column and just kind of go through, you know, like talking with a fan, going through the motions of, you know, this team going back to the drawing board, trading their best player and just kind of running with it. And a little bit of like behind the scenes on this piece took me about 35 minutes to write. Like I was just, you know, and that's not a brag or anything, but like, this is all just stuff that was bouncing around my head. And once I got writing, I was just like, all right, let's get this all out here. And it was pretty straightforward to write something like that. And, you know, I had a lot of flowery language and try to make it sound more cutting and kind of dig into the heart of the matter. But I felt this was all stuff that needed to be said because people are still kind of hanging on to that hope. And not that I want to ruin people's hope. Yeah, he ain't coming back. Like that's like if he suits up in a Sabres uniform next year, it's either something absolutely shocking happened or he's being held hostage. Like and maybe not the most literal way of that, but like something really had to go off the rails for that to happen because all this talk, I mean, this is so much talk and everything is tiptoeing around the matter. Like he's gone. And I just figured it's time to write something about this. And it's not somebody accused me of saying like I was trying to go around and, you know, get out ahead of it when it happens just so I can, you know, beat my chest. I was like, no, like anytime I write, I'm not doing it for congratulations or whatever. Like I'm just doing it to write it. And, you know, a lot of people said, well, you're going to feel bad when he doesn't get traded. I was like, actually, I won't. Actually, no, that'll make things way more interesting if that doesn't happen. So. You know, it's a lot of times it's just the barefaced matter of it, of just writing something to write it. And that's kind of what this was. But like, it's a column in that it's a different kind of column because it doesn't have an opinion that I'm holding on to for dear life. And a lot of times people write columns and they're going to hang on to that opinion and die with it, which that ain't me, man. Like at that point, it's just a. But that's essentially a letter to the editor at that point. Like that's you know, it's not really a column at that point. You're just kind of just yelling and screaming. Like I'm not doing that. I'm just being like, hey, this is what's going to happen. Just be ready for it and don't be taken by surprise because it all sucks.
I'll tell you what, man. It already has legs, and I completely agree with literally everything you wrote in the column, which is why I wanted to talk about it today. On Thursday, it was kind of confirmed, too. Elliot Friedman, and this is kind of a twist, because everyone's just assuming that Jack wants out, and he does. But Elliot Friedman on GR talked about, at the end of the day, he doesn't think the Sabres want to bring back Jack Eichel. So it kind of sounds like neither side wants each other anymore. Now, one thing that really stuck out to me in your piece, which, man, I couldn't agree with it more. It was near the end of it. You wrote that Sabres general manager, Kevin Adams, he's ultimately going to be judged. His tenure as GM is going to be judged more than anything else by what he gets for Eichel. Absolutely true. I mean, there's a lot of pressure. Would you agree there's a lot of pressure on Kevin Adams right now? Because at this point, it's well known that Jack wants out. And now it's become well known that the Sabres really don't. And, you know, the tea leaves, if you read them, when Kevin Adams' press conference is talking about time and time again, players who want to be here. I mean, they kept saying that. Yeah, but that's true, isn't it? I mean, Kevin Adams, he's going to be judged on what he ends up getting for Jack Eichel, just like, to a large extent, Botterill was, based on what he got for Ryan O'Reilly. Kind of the same deal in a way. Even more magnified this time, though, because it's Jack Eichel, right?
Yeah, it 100% is, because this is the guy they bottomed out an entire season for, you know? And to that two respect, seasons. It's kind of... Yeah, it applies to Reinhardt, too, who also is probably not sticking around, I would guess. Like, if you're him, why would you re-up for 1 year? And why would the Sabres do a one-year deal when he can walk away in free agency after the year? Like, you don't do that. Like, that's, I mean, if you let that happen, that's unbelievably bad asset management at that point. But, like, but this is Adams, like, you got to make it shine. And the only difference, I say, is that the O'Reilly situation, he wasn't asking to be traded. Like, maybe he was in not so many words, but, like, he still said he wanted to be part of the solution in Buffalo. Like, it's just that all the losing gets you down, which I don't think that's an incorrect opinion. Losing sucks. And losing that much when you have so much potential sucks even more, because it's just like, why aren't we getting this right? And O'Reilly's always been a guy that puts everything on his shoulders. Like, I always joked around that I said that the Sabres could win a game 10-1. He could have 8 points. But if he was on ice for that one goal against, that's all he would talk about after the game. Just, I got to be better. I got to try better. And, I got to get better next game. I just got to get better. Like, that's him. That's him as a person. Which is, that's unbelievable expectations, but maybe that comes from his dad being a coach too. So, like, I don't know. But in Jack's case, everything has been, it's time to go. Like, and nobody said it directly. Like, Jack hasn't formally requested a trade.
Right.
The Sabres haven't formally said they're going to move him, but it's all basically been said already. Like, that's going to happen. But now that's where Adams is in a really hard spot, because the neck issue for Jack is it will affect what some teams may want to offer up for him. Sabres might have to eat some money on the deal to get what they need, what they want for it, which, you're backed up against the eight ball already. That stinks. Like, that doesn't make it any easier. And if you get a soft return, you're basically just, you just might as well pull it all apart at that point. And start completely fresh with no entanglements whatsoever. Start with Darlene and Cousins, and then just say, let's build it up again with this, because we got to. Like, they're kind of on that road already, but man, if you fumble this trade. Ugh.
I want to read a tweet to you. It's from our buddy, the ever emotional Joe from Queens, at Buffalo Wins on Twitter, Joe. He said, and this is a tweet, and this is in regards, in reference to your piece after he digested it. He says, one thing I've been debating about if Eichel gets traded is whether I am going to root for him elsewhere. I'm conflicted. Part of me wants to see him do well because fuck the Pegulas and Sabres management. But the other part, and this will sound mean, doesn't really care about Eichel. He's a good or great player, but he's not in the same love I have for LaFontaine, Drury, Miller, Briere when they left, and I didn't fault them for leaving. Do you kind of feel that's like a general consensus with Eichel? Because Or do you think it's more him not getting the same love from fans as LaFontaine and Jury because either A, Eichel's never won anything in Buffalo. Not that that his it's his fault because it's not. Or maybe it's also because he does kind of come off as a kind of a dick to some people. And you think it's kind of like a mixture of both, the winning and just the perception of his attitude towards people. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
That I think it's a fair mix of both. I mean, all of those guys that you mentioned that are beloved all had winning attached to them. Like, they all were part of, you know, good to great teams. And they all are just, you know, fans here will go to their grave saying, like, I love this guy forever. He's always going to be my favorite. And Jack, you know, there's no winning attached to him. You know, 81 point season is the best they got. You know, he finished, you know, finished eighth in MVP voting last year, even though it was a total dog crap year and they fell short of even getting into an expanded bubble playoff. Like that, you know, like all those things put in there. And, you know, history should look back at it as, boy, ownership really screwed it up. And I have to hope that's the way history will look at it. I mean, you know, listen, unless the Sabres take off and start winning Stanley Cups after trading them, then like, okay, that this history will treat it a lot differently. But I think, you know, I think there's a lot about him where it's just, you know, he does all the charity stuff. He does, you know, he does all these things. He's got, you know, radio commercials and whatever. He's in the public eye, but it's not quite the same. And, you know, I don't know what plays into that. Like, you know, I've heard, you know, you hear different stories all the time about how he acts off the ice and this, that, and the other thing. And it's just like,
I've heard a lot of them as well.
Whatever.
I'm not going to dignify him on this podcast at this time. We've both heard a lot of shit about Jack off the ice was partying and all kinds of other shit. But anyway,
but like all those guys back in the day, they partied. Like people would run into Miller down in Chippewa and on Elmwood all the time. Like,
I used to see a lot of Sabres out, and to say they were partying like during those Brad May, Rob Ray, Barnaby, those kind of days, I've seen those guys out all the time. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. You know, I kind of take it, Joe, as my interpretation is this, and I know this sounds kind of weird, but I take it like the Pegulas ran him out. Not like I don't want you here, get away. I don't want you on my team. Not that. Because they just did such a lousy job that it's made Jack not want to be here. Because at the end of the day, Jack could be kind of a dick off the ice from what I've heard. I mean, again, I've heard some a lot of good things about him. I've heard some unflattering things about him. But I think at the end of the day, Jack just wants to win, man. Dude wants to win. He's a competitor. And I don't think he's got anything against the Buffalo organization. He's got something against the organization. I don't think he has anything against the city of Buffalo and the fans and the community and the way of living and the weather and all that shit. I don't think Jack Eichel hates Buffalo. I know for sure. I know some Sabres, former Sabres, that absolutely hated living in Buffalo, okay? And being a part of Buffalo. That I don't think that's Jack Eichel at all. I'll never get over the fact that the Sabres spent one full year tanking and essentially two between Reinhardt and Eichel tanking. For a guy who, no, he's not Connor McDavid, but he's a guy who, for the most part, minus the injury, he's lived up to what he was supposed to be, a game-changing franchise center. He's not a bust.
Yep.
So he's not a bust. He's been a great player, a good to great player, but yet this team has still managed to suck every single year of all 6 years that he was here. I mean, forget the fucking playoffs. Dude, St. Patrick's Day is in mid-March. He's never played a meaningful game after St. Patrick's Day in his career in the NHL. So, yeah, if he's in a shitty mood and he's angry, wouldn't you be too? You know, that's how I feel.
But that's an area like that kind of empathy is something sports fans don't have for players because the bottom line is win. Like you're either a winner or you're a loser and that's that. Like, not that I like to compare Sabres and Bills stuff ever, like, because that's just ridiculous. But I think there's an apt comparison here with like Eric Moulds, because Eric Moulds was great as a Buffalo Bill, like should be on the wall, like should be honored. But all those teams stunk. Those teams stunk. Yep. And, you know, it was, you know, whether it's the, you know, it was always the quarterbacks, but like it wasn't any fault of his own. Eric Moulds was a fantastic player. But once it's been enough time to get away from that era, and now that the team's good again, people look back and go, wow, that guy really was good. We should, like, why aren't we appreciating him more now? And I think, you know, and this is going to be way down the road for Eichel, and it depends on how he, you know, how his career plays out and everything goes. But that'll happen here too. It's just, it'll be spoken of more bitterly because I'm assuming this, like, Pegulas are going to own this team forever. Just because it's attached to the hip with the Bills and that's how it's going to go. But it's like, people are expecting he's going to get booed out of the house when he comes back. And it's just like, I don't know, man, it ain't his fault. Like, people still like stand up and cheer Terry Pegula when he comes out on the ice. And it's just like, really? I don't know, man. That doesn't seem like a great idea. Like, he's the problem.
I think you would have to really badmouth Buffalo on his way out to really get that full treatment of boos. I mean, there'll be some people who surely boo him, but I think there's a lot of fans out there. I think more fans are mad at the organization that Jack mm-hmm. wants to leave, or vice versa, than I think they are at Jack for wanting to leave. I'm sure you feel the same way. Look, at the end of the day, though, and again, you wrote about this, and I thought brilliantly, your boy's gone, all right? I still think that priority number one right now is, if it's even semi-realistic, and I don't know that even that it is, find a way to make Sam Reinhart, make him realize that it's worth staying for. Give him the bag. Give him what he wants. I mean, I know it's not his choice this year, but it essentially is because, again, he's a restricted free agent, and this will be it after this year at the most. Man, you can't make Cousins or Middlestat your number one center at this point of their careers right now. You can't do it. You got a guy who showed he could be, he's the number one center. We saw it last year. He could do it. You're just saving a team such a big step. If you could find a way to satisfy this guy, tell him that you're going to be the new face of the franchise, you're getting that C, whatever it takes, man. We're going to build around you. You're going to be our guy. Give him a big deal. I don't know what it is. Do you agree with that? Do you think that he's a guy that you're worth, that he's worth keeping and building around? Or do you think he's just so far maybe emotionally checked out? Because that was, what, 7 years? And just like Jack, he ain't seen shit either. No postseason, no sniff of the postseason. Mm-hmm. Been jerked around a little bit. I don't know. Like, what do you think?
I think you hit on it there. He's been jerked around, and it's a lot. I remember after his ELC was up, and I know he wanted to get the contract thing taken care of as quickly as possible. And the Sabres had an opportunity to get him locked up long-term for not that big amount of money, honestly, like, cause you know, he hadn't really taken that big step. I mean, he was producing, like, he did, you know, he's producing fine. Honestly, but the Sabres wanted to go bridge deals with him. And then, you know, they did it for him. And it was just kind of like, okay. And they cost him a shot at going to world championships. Like, I think Sam had an invite, but he didn't have a contract, so he couldn't go. And he was pissed about that. Remember that on locker clearout day, we asked him, like, hey, you going to Worlds? And he's just like, I don't have a contract. I can't go. Like, shit, sorry. You know, like, that stinks. But, like, they've had multiple opportunities to get him signed long term, and they just haven't chosen the way to go. And, like, you know, they couldn't do it last year because COVID and, like, the money, you know, flat cap, the whole thing. So I understand last year, but now the situation has devolved terribly. And if I'm Sam, now I'm one season away from UFA. I don't know, man. All the power's in his hand. I look at it like team can flex themselves and say, oh, no, you're with us until blah, blah, blah. Like, okay. But Sam's also got arbitration rights. What if he goes in there and says, I want $9 million a year? And the Sabres come back with, well, we were thinking 6.5. Like, I don't know, man. that's a big gap. Like, you can't, like, go to arbitration means he would probably get $8 million for 1 year.
What contract do you think Plague Joe Yurden, capologist right now, or play Sam Reinhart's agent, if Kevin Adams said everything I just said? And I don't think that's going to happen, for the record, because I still think that he falls in that category of Kevin Adams said, I want people who want to be here, and Sam's not that guy. But let's just pretend that he is, because that's my goal. That's my dream. Let's say he is. What is it going to take? Like, what contract, what term do you think, if you're Sam's agent, you say, Sam, take this fucking deal, bro. You're going to make a shitload of money. Something that's, like, even in the ballpark of being realistic. Like, what would it take to lock Sam up long-term right now? Or is it even possible?
I think it's possible because he's making 5.2 now. Or he made 5.2 this past year, I should say. I'm thinking the conversation with Sam's way more different because now he can say, I'm a center. Centers get paid more than wingers, generally, especially when you can handle being a center and being solid. Like he does, he gets shit on for it all the time by a few of the same voices in town for not having a ton of effort, for being a sourpuss, for this, that, and the other thing. Guy works his friggin' ass off. Like he's, Sam's a really goddamn good player. And if I'm his agent, I'm saying, well, now he's a center. Like this team kind of screwed that up for a while. Always had him on the wing. You know, maybe Jack just said like, hey, listen, put Sam on my wing. We're going to ride. Like, okay. Like you don't say no to Jack. You just, okay, fine. But, you know, last year they were kind of forced to play him at center because all the centers got hurt and they traded Stahl. So, all right, Sam, I guess you're our guy. And then, whoa, shit, he's really good at it. Okay. After looking terrible at it for a long time, but now he's good. If I'm his agent, I'm saying, what's the center worth? Oh, what, $8 million a year? Yeah, that's what I want. And if it's a long-term deal, give me, if it's the Sabres trying to retain him, I'd say eight for eight, 64. And if it's another team, it's 8 for 7, 56, whatever. Let's do it. And this, and mind you, in this world, if you've already traded Jack Eichel and you're telling Sam, you're our guy, I think you do that because you're saving $2 million. You're saving $2 million in cap and salary money, and you're still keeping a guy that you're going to consider your number one center. So, I mean, you know, it's bargaining. It's bargaining in a way, but like that, but if I'm Sam's agent, I'm just thinking like, boy, we can ask for a little bit more money now because you can play center. You can play wing. We know you can handle wing, but now you can really handle center. That's worth a few more million to me. Because that's a vital spot. But, you know, if he's a number two center for any contender, that's awesome. If he's a number one center for you, it's probably a little tough, but he can handle it. Like the matchups are harder, might be a little bit more difficult, but he can do it. But if he's your number two guy, holy shit, that's awesome. Like you're sitting pretty good if you've got a guy that's able to produce. He was on a 40 goal pace this year. Holy shit! Like imagine having a center that scores 40 goals. I don't know, like. And a guy who's not terrible defensively. Like, you know, I remember Ryan Kessler really cashed in years ago for being a Selke candidate who scored 40 goals as a center. Like, I don't know. It's, that's what I mean. Like, they could have had this deal done with him forever ago for much less money. And they just chose not to because they were just kind of like, well, we got to see what he can do. And, well, we got to see, you know, if he can handle it. And we're going to try these things. Like, no, he's producing 60 points a year. Just sign him long-term for crying out loud. Like he's producing the same kind of points O'Reilly did. Like for fuck's sake, just do it. Let's get it done. Like, and they never did. And now Sam's got the power because he's 1 year to UFA. He's got Arbrights. I don't know, man, if I'm the Sabres, I'm right up against the wall because unless you come at him long-term, you got to trade him. Because if you know that he's in this mindset of like, he's not going to stick around, why are you going to have him play one more year and like trade him at the deadline for stuff, I guess. But like, how pissed is he going to be here playing all year? Like, you know, like that's where I'm at with it, where it's just like, don't even bother. Like, just don't even bother with it. And just do like maximize what you can get. He wants to play out west, send him to Vancouver, send him to Calgary, get, you know, make that part of your package. They like, get some nice players in return, call it a day. But it goes back to the management. It goes back to management just not taking control. And that's on Botterill. Like Botterill didn't do it. And if that came at the behest of ownership, that's ownership screwing it up. But if that was all on Botterill to be like, I think we should go short with him. That's dumb. Like, I mean, we heard that he wanted to go short with Eichel and then they were just like, no, get him locked up. And that, you know, people were just, oh God, $10 million a year. Turns out that was the right amount for him because who knows, if you wait another year, maybe he's worth 11 and a half. So I don't know, but it's bad. It's bad. Like they're in a horrible, the Sabres are in an absolutely horrible position. And whether it's ownership or GM's past, they're stuck.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's move on to our weekly starting five draft. Your boy here, Pat Moran, is on a 3-week winning streak. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
last one of those weeks was undeserved. Last week was pretty deserved, I think.
Yeah, last week was deserved. What was it, the one where I actually agreed with you? I thought, I'm not saying that I thought you won, but it was certainly should have been a lot closer. I think it was the HBO original series. That was like 2 weeks ago, right? Yeah, yep. That was that one was kind of bullshit. This one, I kind of feel like it was bullshit. It was the deserved result. Anyway, last week we did mobster / gangster movies. I had Godfather 1, Goodfellas, Untouchables, which, by the way, I watched that on TV 2 days ago. It came on. I watched it. Still love it. Bronx Tale, New Jack City. Joe went with Godfather 2, Scarface, Boys in the Hood, Miller's Crossing, and Casino. I took that one on Twitter, the poll, 59-41. You know, in fairness to you, I got a couple things here. I think I've had indirectly, not on purpose, it's just the way it worked out, man. I've had a huge scheduling advantage.
I think, so to speak.
I feel like you kind of been screwed a little bit with the schedule. Like, it's kind of like the equivalent of being a hockey team and you got to play like 3 games in 4 nights, like that level of being screwed. And I mean, more specifically, like 2 weeks ago, I had the first pick when we did HBO original series, which got me The Sopranos. And I think the name The Sopranos just really stood out.
It's such
this past
for you.
Week. This past week, when we did mobsters and gangster movies, I think it's universally recognized that there's like 3 movies and then all the rest. There's Godfather 1 and 2 and Goodfellas. And because it was your turn to have the first pick, that got me the next 2. You know, so I think no matter which one of the 3 you took, I was going to get 2. I think that was a big advantage to me. I don't think there was a true consensus number 1. So basically I got 2. So I think having a top pick hurt you. Whereas 2 weeks ago, I think having a top pick helped me. Now, to be honest, I also think Miller's Crossing hurt you a little bit in the polls. Not that it's a bad movie. I just don't think on a wide level.
I had a
level,
lot of people tell me that that was a sneaky, great pick.
Yeah.
Like, I had a few people say like, what a call. And I was like, thank you.
But it's like making a good indie movie. It's like making a good indie movie. Like, you got good critical reviews, but like it bombed a little bit at the box office. You know what I mean? I don't think Boys in the Hood or New Jack City, I don't think those played well for either of us, actually. Some people, a lot of people actually, like for me anyway, New Jack City, they were naming off other movies that we should have, which they do that.
I was pretty surprised though. Nobody yelled at us for not taking Donnie Brasco. Not one. No, I don't know if they yelled at you, but nobody yelled at me about Donnie Brasco. And I was shocked. Like, that was what I figured everybody's going to be like, are you kidding
me? I saw
me?
One Come or two on. Comments. Yeah, one or two comments. But yeah, I expected more. I do think this week is going to be one where it's just such a broad category and there's just so many movies and characters to choose from. I think we're definitely going to get a nice dosage of, you know, people who we don't pick. This week we're doing fictitious sports movie characters. And I expect to get an earful on Twitter also. And by the way, so it's known for everyone listening, and because I'm sure some people who are not listening to this podcast who vote and got to chime in on Twitter, lazy bastards. Anyway, they're going to complain that like guys like Crash Davis from Bull Durham, and you and I talked about this before we started taping, Jimmy Dugan was not even his real name from a League of Their Own. They're real people, man. Or they're at least based off real people. They're not fictional. Like Rudy.
Ooh.
Rudy the character. That's based on.
It's Rudy Rudiger. He's a real person. I met him.
Exactly. Like, you know, some facts were embellished in the movie, Rudy. But point being is that he's real. He's not fictitious. So guys like that are not eligible. So everyone out there listening, know that ahead of time. I got the first pick this week because you went first last week.
You do.
All right, so that's how it's going to work. Same as always. I'm going to pick five. You're going to pick five. Snake draft style. 1, 2, 2, 2, 2, and 1. All right, you know what? I could sit here. It's like Jacksonville when they were on the clock in the NFL draft in April. Well, why they took like 8 minutes to make their pick, I have no idea. But everyone in the world knew they were taking Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
I could sit here and entertain other offers in trades right now or drag this out. But I got the first pick. And at least for me anyway, this is a no-brainer. Rudy's a real-life person, a real underdog. The ultimate fictional movie underdog to me is Rocky Balboa. It's my favorite movie franchise of all time to this day. And I know this is an unpopular opinion, by the way, side note. Rocky III is actually my favorite Rocky movie of all of them. And I know everyone else says Rocky II or Rocky I. But yeah, I loved Rocky III. It had everything in there. But anyway, your boy was the real-life underdog, the real-life American success story. A little bit overrated as a boxer, by the way. Really think about it. He split with Apollo. He split with Apollo Creed. And even when he won by a second. He got his ass knocked silly by Clubber Lang the first time they fought. Drago, that fight should have been stopped a million times. He went the distance with that guy in Balboa. I don't even know what the hell the guy's name was. Whoever Antonio Tarver played the character, I don't even remember who that was anymore. Mm-hmm. But my point being is that the guy was like maybe about a 500 fighter at best against the best competition. But anyway, that aside, just a great story, a great franchise. So yeah, I got to go with Rocky. That's a no-brainer for me. So that's my first pick, and now you're going to be on the board, and you got two.
Now I'm happy I had you scouted correctly because I assumed Rocky was going to be number one regardless of who was picking number one. So it's such an automatic. My next pick though, it's going to be one Reggie Dunlop from Slapshot.
Okay, yeah, I had a feeling I had him scouted for you too. He's on my list. He's on my short list.
Now Reg is just such an unbelievable. Awesome character. Like it's Paul Newman A. So like that's automatic super credit.
Yeah.
But like he's just like the ultimate dude in that movie. Like he's just, you know, he's a smart ass. You know, he's smooth. Like he thinks he's smooth with the ladies. He's really not. You know, he's always trying to chase his ex around. And but like as far as like for the boys and doing all that and trying to like keep the team centered. Perfect guy. And just like that whole movie, if it doesn't have Paul Newman playing that role, is probably not a great movie. But man, oh man, he just like Reggie Dunlop is just such an unreal character. So I like that. That to me made him an automatic pick for me there. My other one. Now, mind you, I made a list of about 35 characters here, which I think was probably too many people because now I'm just like looking at this like a shopping list and I'm like, oh man, I could take that guy. I could take that guy. How about him? But you know what? I'm taking Shane Falco. Keanu Reeves. Because Shane Falco, like that movie is just such an insane movie. But man, Keanu friggin' rules in that. Like, it's like such, like, I mean, I know Keanu is like hip and everything now and everybody loves it, but like, man, Shane Falco is the friggin' coolest dude in the world. And he's, you know, he's playing like this, you know, like scab quarterback or whatever. And he's just owning it. Like he's just friggin' great. And that might be my Keanu like fandom coming into play there, but Shane Falco is my number two guy. I friggin' love him. He's great. I might lose points on like noteworthiness, but yeah.
The reason why I'm laughing so much so hard is because I think Joe and I, after many, many podcast statements, finally have something that we are literally on the complete opposite side of the fence. And which, by the way, Shane Falco, I love him in a cheesy kind of way, just like I love Culture Club and Duran Duran and Huey Lewis in the News in the 80s, you know, that cheesy music. I actually love it. But with Keanu Reeves as an actor, I wish my wife was here, because I would call her in and say, without even having to look at her, tell Joe who my least favorite actor on the face of this earth is. And she would not, she would take a half a second and she would say fucking Keanu Reeves. I promise you that. But yeah, Shane Falco is, he was on my list. Like I got a bunch of, I got about, not 35, but I got about a good 20 something. And he's on there too. That's a good one. And I think that's going to play well too. All right. So I'm on the board here with two. You know, one of them for me is relatively easy. I'm going back into that 80s rabbit hole. I just can't help myself. I always do. Danny LaRusso from The Karate Kid. I mean, come on, man. He took down Cobra Kai at the All Valley Tournament when he was just a teenager. He overcame adversity, moved out to Cali. His dad died when he was like, what, 8 years old or some shit. Mm-hmm. Falls in love again in another part of the world. Ends up having a fight like literally to the death in Japan, shows some mercy at the end, grows up, and as we see now in the Netflix series, is a successful car sales business. So he turned out to be a good businessman. I mean, let's fucking go, man. I'm all about Danny LaRusso. So that's going to be one. Now this gets a little bit harder for me, because now I got a list that's kind of clumped together. So Danny LaRusso is going to be one. You know what? I'm going to actually go... I'm going to go a coach here. I'm going to go with Gordon Bombay.
Really?
I'm going to go with Gordon Bombay. Dude, he's a child hockey prodigy as a kid, you know, but then he blew the big game. His dad died. He became a mean lawyer, shitty lawyer, gets a DWI, gets in all kinds of trouble. His life's a complete disaster. And ultimately, he becomes like a great youth hockey coach, man. I mean, dude, his work with that District 5 squad in that league, unrivaled, man. It's unparalleled. Developed now, a lot of talent.
Here's a confession on my part. Like, my first pick was a hockey guy in a hockey movie. I cannot stand the Mighty Ducks. I've disliked it my entire life. So like all the, like gotten in the nostalgia and all this, especially with the new Disney Plus series where he's back and everything. And I'm just like, all right, whatever. Like, I know the characters, I've seen the movies, but I'm just like,
right.
Yeah. I just didn't attach. Like, I think that's a product of me being a teen, like a teen at the time. And I'm thinking like when they started the franchise in Anaheim and then they, it was owned by Disney and then they named the Mighty Ducks. And I was like, that's the cheesiest shit in the world. Get out of here. Like, oh, that's a social movie. Then they had the cool ass logo. And I was just like, all right, I guess it's fine. But like, I couldn't get down with the movies at all. I was just like, it was lost on me. I think I was too cool for school when they came out, and I never cuddled up to it afterwards. So I was just like, yep, I'm good here.
So the Twitter poll this week is going to turn into a true rivalry here. And I don't like Keanu. You don't like the Mighty Ducks. What's going on? I like it, man. A little bad blood going this week.
I think the Keanu hive is going to get you this time.
They probably are.
Entire campaign is going to be like, Pat hates Keanu Reeves. Vote for me.
There is a Keanu hive out there. Just like there's a Nicki Minaj hive too. When you try to mess with her, people get killed on Twitter for that shit.
Yeah, just don't.
All right. So you've had two, and now you're on the clock for the next two. And then I'll get my last two.
Okay. So, man, I've got so many good picks here. I got to think of like the right one.
This is where good teams find a way to win and bad teams find a way to lose, Joe.
It's true. It's true. Kelly Leak, the Bad News Bears.
Oh. I forgot about the Bad News Bears.
Yeah, Jackie Earl Haley as like the scumbag kid who just turned out to be the ringer.
So good. Yeah, the ringer. He's not on my list. But the only reason I'm not on my list is because I completely forgot about the movie. Shit. That's a good pick.
Yeah, I mean, he's just such a, like, he looks like a little shit. He plays like a little shit. He acts like a little shit. Like he's like what, 12 and he's smoking? Like, okay, sure. 13 yeah. and he's smoking and riding a dirt bike. Like, okay, he just shows up and he's automatically the best baseball player. I mean, granted, the Bad News Bears were called the Bad News Bears for a reason. But man, oh man, like, well, like he was like scumbag cool, like Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's an anti-hero, because Walter Matthau is just kind of like a, you know, kind of a deadbeat. And, you know, you got, you know, he's got his niece, Amanda, or his stepdaughter or something like that. And like, they're, you know, they got their, you know, dad kid thing to figure out there. But Kelly Leak shows up and he's just owning everything at baseball. And he's just such a little shit. Like, that's the only way I can describe him.
He's 59 in real life. That's how old that movie is now. What a fucking classic movie that is, too. Man. Or series, I should say. Classic franchise, not a classic movie. Classic franchise. Damn, I'm kind of mad at myself. I'm not sure how it's going to... I'm looking forward to reactions on that on Twitter. Not sure how that's going to play.
I don't know how many people will remember him by the character name. Like, yeah. I think for some of these, we might have to put the movie name
to remind people. Well. That's one too. That's a great fucking pick, man.
So, all right, I feel good now. I got your we found common ground. That's what we did.
All right, we did. Finally. Yep. You got one more too.
On that same Where's the guy? There we go. Sydney Dean.
Good one.
From White Men Can't Jump. That's Wesley Snipes just
being... Wesley Snipes. Yeah, it's Wesley Snipes. It's not Woody Harrelson for everyone out there. That's Wesley Snipes.
The most trash-talkingest, like, badass playground baller going. And, like, you know, there's the whole thing with, you know, him and Woody just, you know, figuring out how to scam people out of basketball, which is great. But, like, Sydney Dean... Holy shit, dude. He friggin' rules. Like, just everything about him. Like, you know, taunting guys after hitting the game-winning shot and everything. It's just, he's so cool. Like, he's coolest dude going. Like, when that movie came out, like, everybody's like, wow, it's Woody from Cheers. It's like, yeah, but, yo, check out Wesley Snipes just, like, being awesome, like, through that whole movie. Like, love it. Like, that's a great movie. But, man, Sydney Dean makes that movie go. Like, I know it's all built around Woody Harrelson, but Sydney Dean is the guy. He's the straw that stirs the drink.
You know, I admire both of our unwavering commitments to never pick anybody who's been in a movie like within the last 20 years. we do this constantly, you and I. All right, so you go with Kelly Leak and Sydney Dean. So you got three, I got three. These are my last two. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go, I'm going to stay in that same like late 80s era. I think it was late 80s, if not early 90s. I think it was 80s. Same, not the same pick, but the same one of the, he was in the movie, Wesley Snipes, that I'm talking about here. I'm going to Major League. I'm going Ricky Vaughn, man. The flamethrower. Nice. Flamethrower, man. He dominated the California Penal League. Then he went to Cleveland and he dominated Major League Baseball, man. Turned Cleveland around, helped put them on the map, got the strikeout to win the pennant. Then the next year he went Hollywood and kind of sucked, but then he got his swagger back, his temper, and he got his fastball back. So I'm a big Ricky Vaughn fan. I had his t-shirt, by the way. I had a 99 Indians t-shirt with Vaughn on the back a handful of years. I don't have it anymore. I outgrew it. Let's just put it that way. It used to fit me and then it stopped. And it stopped fitting me through the years. So, all right. So that's my fourth. I got one more here and I got about four or five people that I really, really like. I'm going to predict who we get the most shit for if you don't end up taking them afterwards.
Okay.
All right. Here's my last pick. I'm going to go to the sport of golf, and I'm going to go with Roy Tin Cup McIlvoy from Tin Cup. Former golf prodigy, man, going through life, no direction, no purpose. Falls in love with a shrink who's Don Johnson's ex-girlfriend. Their rivalry ensues. He qualifies for the U.S. Open, shoots an 83 in the first round, comes back with a 62. He's in contention. 18th hole, last round, he puts it in the drink. And instead of taking a drop where he could still potentially birdie it and go to a playoff, he shoots again and goes in the drink again. And he's all down to his last ball. And then he puts it in the hole on his, I think he took a 12. on the last hole, but I loved Kevin. By the way, we could have picked Kevin Costner probably for about four different sports movie characters. Right. But yeah, I'm going to go with Tin Cup, man. I feel good about that one. So Ricky Vaughn and Roy McAvoy, those are going to be my last two. And now you're on the board and you're going to get the last pick of the draft. Make it a good one.
So there's a lot of possibilities here. Like, I mean, and like also from movies that we've already kind of covered, like you could pick about three different people out of Rocky than Rocky and be okay with that. Yep. And you could, I mean, geez, I'm just looking through my list here. There's so many good ones. And like even Major League, you could pick out a handful of people from Major League and be okay.
I have a handful written down.
Yeah. See, there's ones that I want to pick with my heart because it's just like, oh, I love that character. But then there's ones that say in my head, dude, you're going to get the floor mopped with you if you take him. Right. And like, I just don't want to do that. And Al Zurvik.
Who is that off the top of my head?
Caddyshack. That's Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh my God. Yes.
There's no
You would win this poll, Joe. You would win this poll in my heart. I'm going to be completely honest with you. Because two of your five characters I didn't have, and they would have been on my list if I even thought of the movie. I never even thought of the movie at all. Damn it.
Why I did exhaustive research.
You sure did.
But I mean, that whole movie, like that movie's unbelievable. First off, it's probably it hasn't aged terribly well, but like not as bad as some other ones, but it still kind of hangs on, which is, that's okay. But when you think of all the people in that, Judge Smales, Ty Webb, Danny Noonan, Rodney Dangerfield's character is the one that makes that entire movie go.
Kyle Al Zurvik
is the guy. Yeah, like Spackler and the groundhog. So like,
oh my God,
like there's just so many people in that movie. But man, like Rodney Dangerfield is just like an unbelievable force of nature as Al Zurvik, because he just doesn't fit the country club, and he just does everything his way, and he just friggin' goes nuts, and it's so good. And like even though he like. What was it like, even though he's just like, he always kind of like tries to find a way to like kind of backdoor his way out of like the final hole, and it's, or like the final battle, and it's just like, you know, it's fine. Danny Noonan's got his back, but it's just still like Roddy makes that face, like, oh geez, oh my arm, I can't do it, you know. It's just like, but it's just like, you know, the way him and Smales play off each other is just like, you know, and reading this, you know, like there's a book out about like the history of Caddyshack, and like the stories about that movie from behind the scenes are just insane. And it's the guy who played Smales was like a dead serious actor, and Rodney Dangerfield is Rodney Dangerfield. So those two guys playing off each other makes Smales is unbelievably funny in that whole movie. But like Rodney just being like the punchline for his, you know, to being his foil. Oh man, it just drives the whole movie. He's just, Al Zurvik is like that's the kind of character you put into a comedy movie, and you're just like, oh, thank God he's here.
That movie is it's among my favorite movies ever. Caddyshack, Animal House, especially older movies, they're right there neck and neck for my favorite movie ever. You know, it's funny because, and I'm mad because here's proof that I forgot about it. Before I started having Joe on the podcast, Dell was doing some casual Fridays with me, and we would do this same exact poll, and we did a starting five of all-time comedians, and I drafted Rodney Dangerfield in my all-time comedian draft in the third round. That's how funny I think he is. That's how much I love him.
Oh, man.
I never thought of the movie. I'll tell you what, though. I'm looking at our list, and these are, again, I just talked about this a few minutes ago. I think critically, these are going to be appreciated names. I think on a general consensus, I think we're going to take a beating. And first of all, because there's just so many big name characters out there, but mm-hmm. also just the pure volume of people you could pick is going to lead people to saying, you know, they would pick other people. But yeah, we're going to take a beat. I don't give a shit. Real quick here. I did have one that neither, I'm guaranteeing you this. We're going to hear a lot of Benny the Jet Rodriguez from The Sandlot.
He was very high on my list.
He's mine too. He was one of the people I considered at the end. Yeah, we're gonna get a little bit of a beating for that. I suspect some people are gonna say Roy Hobbs from The Natural, which, by the way, part of that movie was filmed literally across the street from where I grew up on the West Side. I'll never forget that. It was like in the early 80s. So yeah, I would expect Roy Hobbs, maybe Bobby Boucher. I got a couple other ones written down. I'll fly through real quick too. Billy Hoyle, the other half of White Men Can't Jump. I got Jackie Moon, Shooter McGavin, Jesus Shuttleworth from He Got Game. Kenny Powers from Eastbound and Down, which, by the way, I should have considered that more when we did our HBO original series. Jimmy Chitwood from Hoosiers. The Hanson brothers, sticking with Slapshot. You talked about Major League Baseball or Major League. I had Pedro Serrano, and I probably would have had him higher if he could have hit a curveball, but he couldn't hit a curveball. And then Love and Basketball. Okay, that was one of my favorite movies. It was with Omar Epps, and Monica Wright was the character, the character of the girl. That she was the basketball star who was in love with Omar Epps. She was awesome. So those are ones that I mostly considered. But Drago, Mickey, Clubberlang, Apollo. We're gonna we're gonna catch a beating, dude. Did I miss a couple? You got a couple?
I do. I do. I had a couple that you didn't have. Dottie Hinson from League of Their Own.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was another one very high on the list. But then I saw Caddyshack. I was like, I got it. Like, Al Cervic is just unbelievable. But, like, Dottie Hinson, holy Jesus. Like, what a thorough, fully rounded character, too. And then plus you get the debate at the end of the movie. Did she drop the ball or did Kit knock it out clean? Like, did she do her kid sister a favor?
I don't think she did. What do you think? I don't think she did.
I used to think that she did, but I don't think she did. I think Dottie was too much of a fierce competitor. Like, she never let Kit have one, which leads to the debate. She never let Kit have one, but then maybe she did because Kit was just so down on herself and she was so pissed about everything. And then she was just kind of like, all right, well, Kit can have this one. She earned it. But then also, like, Dottie wouldn't do that. Like, Dottie would never tank it. Like, that's crazy. Dean Youngblood and Racky from Youngblood.
Good one.
Now, I didn't like Rob Lowe's. I didn't like Youngblood. Racky's a frigging menace, though. Like, that guy, like, I mean, you talk about movie heels. That guy is frigging perfect. Cole Trickle and Rowdy Burns from Days of Thunder.
Oh, okay.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah, with Tom Cruise, right? Yeah.
Yep. Paul Crewe from The Longest Yard.
Yeah. Burt Reynolds or Adam Sandler? Are you talking Burt Reynolds or are you talking Adam Sandler, though?
Burt Reynolds.
All right. Thank you. I was going to say, no Adam Sandler.
It's not Adam Sandler. All right.
I agree with that. I agree with Burt being Paul. Okay.
And I wanted to, like, if we got really silly with picks, I was going to go with one of Joe Cooper, Doug Reamer, or Squeak Scolari from Basketball.
Oh, God.
Which if you've never seen Basketball, it's an insane movie.
It's actually funny as shit, man.
Blows me away the number of like big time sports celebrities, like sports like announcing celebrities that got to be a part of that movie. Because holy shit, the things they had Al Michaels and Bob Costas say through that movie is like, what? You got these two guys to say it? Like, Jesus. Amazing. It's a legit funny as hell movie. And like, I think for anybody older than maybe 45 or 50, they're looking at it going like, I don't know about that. I'm not going to watch that stupid shit. Like, but anybody like that was like South Park, grew up with South Park stuff. Like, you were just into it immediately and it's friggin' hilarious.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to wrap it up here. Get out of here. Let me go through these picks one more time. I drafted Rocky Balboa, Daniel LaRusso, Gordon Bombay, Ricky Vaughn, and Roy Tinkup McAvoy. Joe went with Reggie Dunlop, Shane Falco, Kelly Leak, Sidney Dean, and Al Cervic. It's going to be a fun poll. Like I said, I think the consensus is, I don't know who's going to win this. I think the consensus is we're going to lose in the court of public opinion and catching an ass whipping on Twitter. But anyway, give Joe a follow on Twitter at Joe Yurden. The poll will be up at Pamaran Tweets. It'll be up all weekend. Go on and vote. Joe, thanks for joining me as always. And you know, talking movies is fun, but thanks for shooting the shit with me, especially about Saber stuff, because that's not fun to talk about. It's not easy to do. And your article was awesome. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on. So thanks as always, buddy.
Always, man. It's always fun. I'm glad we can cut loose with our starting five every week to just kind of cool down and enjoy things.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.